Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 7, text 43. Uvacha cha asahanti asya bandana anayanam sati muchyatam muchyatam esha brahmana nitaram guru. Okay. Uvacha chashahantyasya uvacha kasyahantyasya bandhanasnayanam sati bandhanam nayanam sati muchatam muchatam esha muchatam muchatam esha brahmano nitaram guru brahmano nitaram guru uvacha kasyahat yasya bandhanam nayanam sati muchatam muchatam esha brahmano nitaram guru. Oh, sorry.
Vandana Nayanam Sati.
Uvacha said. Cha and Asahanti being unbearable for her. Asya his Bandana being bound. Anayanam bringing him. Sati devoted. Muchitam Muchitam just get him released. Esha this. Brahmana, a Brahmana. Nitaram, our. Guru, teacher. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Translation. I guess this is Vyasadeva speaking. She could not tolerate Ashvatthamas being bound by ropes, and being a devoted lady, she said, release him, for he is a Brahmana, our spiritual master. Purport. As soon as Ashvatthama was brought before Draupadi, she thought it intolerable that a Brahmin should be arrested like a culprit and brought before her in that condition, especially when the Brahmana happened to be a teacher's son. Arjuna arrested Ashvatthama, knowing perfectly well that he was the son of Dronacharya. Krishna also knew him to be so, but both of them condemned the murderer without consideration of his being the son of a Brahmana. According to revealed scriptures, a teacher or spiritual master is liable to be rejected if he proves himself unworthy of the position of a guru or spiritual master. A guru is called also an acharya, or a person who has personally assimilated all the essence of shastras and has helped his disciples to adopt the ways. Ashvatthama failed to discharge the duties of a brahmana or teacher, and therefore he was liable to be rejected from the exalted position of a brahmana. On this consideration, both Lord Sri Krishna and Arjuna were right in condemning Ashvatthama. But to a good lady like Draupadi, the matter was considered not from the angle of shastric vision, but as a matter of custom. By custom, Ashvatthama was offered the same respect as offered to his father. It was so because generally the people accept the son of a brahmana as a real brahmana, by sentiment only. Factually, the matter is different. A brahmana is accepted on the merit of qualification and not on the merit of simply being the son of a brahmana. But in spite of all this, Draupadi desired that Ashvatthama be at once released, and it was all the same, a good sentiment for her. This means that a devotee of the Lord can tolerate all sorts of tribulation personally, but still such devotees are never unkind to others, even to the enemy. These are the characteristics of one who is a pure devotee of the Lord. Om Aginatam Anandashaj Ananjanashalakaya Chakshur Unmelitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gudavaya Maha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakaramayam Dharati Swaparantikam. So this whole pastime reminds me of a song. It's not exactly a bhajan, but in the spirit of Yukta Vairagya, I will recite the lyrics to this song. Okay? It goes, take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the park. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I never come back. Because it's root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. Because it's one. I'm sparing you. I'm not singing it, okay? Because it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out in the old ball game. Anybody know that song? Some of the Prabhupada disciples might know that song. Shame Amala Bhakti Maharaj wasn't here. But anyway, the point is that, so this is strike two for old Ashvatthama. Strike two. One more strike and he's out. He's really, you know, blowing it all over the place. First, you know, he comes in, he thinks that he's going to do something heroic by killing the 5 sleeping sons of the Pandavas. Well, actually, he was intending to kill the Pandavas, and by mistake, he killed the 5 sleeping sons of the Pandavas, and he thought that was pretty good. And the proof of that is he brought the heads of the 5 sleeping sons of the Pandavas back to Duryodhana, who was, you know, laying wasted on the battlefield because Bhima broke his thighs or something. And even Duryodhana wasn't pleased. Matter of fact, he was the opposite of pleased. He didn't say, well, that's not, you know, he condemned that action. So it was bad judgment. You know, he made a big mistake. Okay? But did he, you know, did he learn from it? No. No. You know, so that then when they were chasing him to catch him, rather than, you know, have it, well, I made one mistake, and now maybe I should just kind of like stop and fight like a normal person with Arjuna who's chasing after me. You know, he's a son of a Brahmin. I don't know what he really is, because he's not a Brahmin. He's fighting. So is he a Kshatriya? I'm not sure. But in any event, he made a second mistake, a second example of poor judgment, which was that rather than just stop and fight with Arjuna, like in, you know, some chivalrous sort of a way, he decided to invoke the Brahmastra. And not just, he could have, because he did it, he's going to do this for the third strike, he could have invoked the Brahmastra and just pinpointed it to just kill Arjuna. Because he did that to try to get Maharaj Parikit. And we're going to read that, we're going to hear about that in a few pages. We're going to hear about that in the upcoming verses, in the next chapter. So he could have done that. He could have done that. But did he do that? No. What did he do? He invoked the Brahmastra to basically destroy everything and everyone. Right? That's what he did. So that was also poor judgment. There is, you know, a second thing. And of course, they were able to counteract that. And, and then finally, the third strike for him was after he was shown kind of, you know, some leniency. I mean, at that point he was captured after Arjuna was able to retract that and counteract that, and they brought him into the camp and they didn't kill him. They just, at that point, all they did, they cut the jewel from his head and they disfigured him and sent him off, you know. But and that was kind of, you know, that they showed him some kindness, some leniency like that. But did he appreciate that? No. What did he do? He just took it as a further opportunity to be further offensive and try to kill the last descendant of the Pandu dynasty, of, you know, the whole family dynasty like that, which is Maharaj Parikit in the womb of Uttara. So, you know, three strikes, he's out. he's a really good, the only thing we have to be thankful to Ashwatthama for is that he's shown us a really good example of exactly what not to do, how not to, you know, use your intelligence and your mind, because he's just, you know, made every mistake here. And as a result of that, after three strikes, after his third strike, he was even condemned by Krishna, because as we've heard from different devotees who've been giving previous classes, that after that, it was only after that, after he tried to kill Maharaj Parikit in the womb of Uttara, that's when he got cursed by Krishna, that he had to wander for 3,000 years in the swamps and marshes with no human association, no companionship, no human association, and that he would be inflicted by various diseases, and he would be bit by insects and so forth and so on. You know, so that was the punishment that was he was cursed to, or, you know, Krishna sentenced him to as a result after that third strike thing. So, you know, once again, very poor judgment. And so, as I said, he's definitely, you know, who we don't want to follow. But on the other hand, I'm going to give an example of somebody who we do want to follow. This story comes from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This was during the time when Lord Chaitanya was living in Jagannath Puri. And it was during the, Lord Chaitanya lived in Jagannath Puri for 18 years altogether. Okay? You know, he took sannyas at 24. So for the first 6 years after he took sannyas, he was traveling throughout India. And then for the second 6 years, he was in Jagannath Puri, and he was, wasn't in seclusion those first 6 years. He was associating with the devotees. He was, they were doing kirtan in the Jagannath temple for some, you know, I think Prabhupada said 3-4 hours every evening, something like that, long kirtans. And, he was available, okay? So it was during this period that there was this devotee of Lord Chaitanya. His name was Bhagavan Mishra. And he made friendly acquaintance with this Brahmin from Bengal. And this Brahmin, it wasn't a Vaishnav at that point. He was just a Brahmin, you know, regular old Brahmin. And they made friends. And that Brahmin was actually staying with Bhagavan Mishra at his home in Jagannath Puri at the time. And he happened to be a poet. So, you know, by the influence of the association or whatever, he composed some poetry about Lord Jagannath and Lord Chaitanya, an attempt to glorify Lord Chaitanya, okay? And he recited it to Bhagavan Mishra, who thought, oh, very nice. This is very good. And they had some other devotees hear it, and they thought, yeah, hey, this is good, you know. So Bhagavan Mishra thought, well, I want Lord Chaitanya to hear this. But there was a standard etiquette that Lord Chaitanya, he didn't hear anything unless it was first heard by Swarup Damodar. Because Lord Chaitanya, you know, he was very refined in his understanding, obviously. And if somebody presented something to him and it had rasa bas in it, you know, conflicting mellows, it was very disturbing to him. Actually, it says in the CC that he became angry. So in order to avoid that, Swarup Damodar would screen. He was the screen. He had to hear it first. And if Swarup Damodar, who also understood those things properly, if he said, yeah, it's okay, that's good, no problem here, and then Lord Chaitanya would hear it. So they understood that it had to go through Swarup Damodar. So Bhagavan Mishra approached Swarup Damodar and asked, okay, you know, this fellow, he's wrote some really nice poetry glorifying Lord Chaitanya. Can you hear it? And Swarup Damodar goes, no. Because he knew he wasn't a Vaishnav and, you know, wasn't a devotee. So he really was like thinking, there's no possible way he's going to be able to, it's going to be proper because he's not a Vaishnav. He doesn't know the Siddhanta. He doesn't know the philosophy properly. So but Bhagavan Mishra was, you know, they were friends. They had all devotees of Lord Chaitanya. Bhagavan Mishra was one of the, you know, confidential devotees of Lord Chaitanya. So he kept asking him. He asked him a second time and a third time, you know, and after like third time of asking him 3 days in a row, Swarup Damodar went, okay. They listened to, you know, they all got together, Swarup Damodar and Bhagavan Mishra and the poet and a few other devotees were there too. And they said, can you read the introduction to your poetry? Swarup Damodar asked him and he read it. And he said, okay. And, you know, in the introduction, it was comparing Lord Jagannath to an inanimate object. And it was making the point that Lord Chaitanya was in the life of Lord Jagannath, who was basically being compared to an inanimate object. So, and then Swarup Damodar asked him, he gave him a further, he heard it, and he asked him to explain it. And sure enough, he kind of explained it, something along those lines. So, you know, at that point, Swarup Damodar said, you are a fool. You know, he just chastised him. I mean, full on, you know, not maliciously, but, you know, righteously. You're a fool. And actually, with every word you present here, you're just digging your own, you know, you're further condemning yourself because you don't know this philosophy. You have no business, you know, trying to present this kind of poetry. You don't know. Anyway, so he really chastised him, right? Heavily. And when everybody heard what Swarup Damodar was saying, all the other devotees, they came to their senses too, and they realized, oh, yeah, we were just being sentimental. I mean, we weren't thinking critically here because Swarup Damodar is spot on. He's on everything he's saying, you know? So this poor Brahmin, he didn't know where to turn, you know? He just kind of put his head down and he just, okay, you know. And Swarup Damodar could see that, you know, he wasn't trying to, like, defend himself. He wasn't trying to retaliate or anything like that. He just kind of, he was taking it. And Swarup Damodar kind of felt bad that, okay, I got to give this guy a path upwards, you know. So he said, well, actually, you know, you're kind of fortunate in one sense because, you know, you use this, you know, according to the words you used, like some of the acharyas do this. Sometimes somebody, some demon tries to blaspheme Krishna, and then the acharyas will take what they say and they kind of interpret it in a slightly different way, and it's kind of glorifying. So Swarup Damodar did that with his poetry, and he said, actually, so in one sense, you actually have glorified Lord Chaitanya here, so it's not so bad, you know. But then he kind of let him off the hook a bit. And then he went on to say, but you know, the thing is this, if you really, you know, you want to do this kind of thing, it's okay, that's good, but you gotta Bhagavatashtani, how's it go? Yeah, Bhagavata Purigya, Bhagavatashtani. You have to take shelter of the bona fide devotees. You have to hear from the elevated bona fide devotees and learn the Siddhanta properly and, you know, assimilate all this, you know, knowledge, and then you'll be able to do it. So that's what his recommendation was to him. And, you know, so this Brahmin was still kind of like, he's just been heavily chastised. I mean, he was a Brahmin, you know, he wasn't just some fool off the street. So he was really, you know, but he did the right thing. It's described that after that, you know, he was humble. He took a straw of the street, you heard that expression, straw of the street in your mouth? He did that, It's according to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he just paid a dandabats. And actually, I was. Does anybody know what the significance of the straw of the street is? You know, the straw in the mouth is? I had that explained. I never knew. I just learned it about a year ago when I was on the Parikram. I heard Vaisheshika who explained it. Does anybody know? I'll tell you then. The straw of the street signifies this. In India, what they would do is if somebody did something really wrong and they wanted forgiveness for it, they'd take the straw and they put it in their mouth. And the idea is so they'd go around to everybody and they'd be begging forgiveness. And if you got the straw in your mouth, you can't say anything. You see? So in other words, I did this. So the idea, the mood is, I did this thing wrong. I know it. I'm really sorry. And here I am with the straw of the street in my mouth. And now you could say whatever you want, chastise me in any way that you feel is appropriate. And I'm not going to say anything in retaliation. I got the straw in my mouth. I can't open my mouth because I got the straw in my mouth. That was how he explained it. So that's what it says. He had the straw of the street in his mouth, and he paid the dandabats. And there he was, just like that, in front of all the devotees. And then it describes that the devotees, they went, well, okay, he's taking the humble position. So, and Srupa Dhammada just saw the reaction of all the other devotees, and he went, okay, yeah, he's taking the humble position. And they just decided, okay, well, yeah, so what? Okay, you made a mistake, that's okay. And then they went into Lord Chaitanya, and they described the whole incident. And Lord Chaitanya's mood was, it's not really elaborately, described, but you can tell. Lord Chaitanya's mood was, well, okay, yeah, he made a mistake, and he took the humble position, and everybody's happy with his, the way he dealt with the whole thing. So, yeah, I accept him. And he was accepted. And he was accepted as, at that point, as one of the, devotees of Lord Chaitanya. And he went on to become a regular old devotee of Lord Chaitanya. So that's a real success story. There's somebody, he made a mistake, but rather than compound it, by taking shelter of his false ego and trying to, defend himself or even worse, criticize Srupa Dhammadhar in return or something like that, which is kind of like what Ashvatthama did. He was fortunate. He took shelter of the right thing. He was humble and he was submissive and he got the mercy. He went from being a regular old Brahmin who didn't understand the philosophy to being one of the confidential associates of Lord Chaitanya. So that's a really good, lesson to be learned. There's a couple important points in this purport as well that we should mention. So it's talking about, in one point in the purport here, Arjuna and Krishna, Prabhupada says they were dealing with Ashvatthama according to the Shastra. It says here, on this, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna were right in condemning Ashvatthama. But it says here, but a lady like Draupadi, the matter was considered not from the angle of Shastric vision, but a matter of custom. So, that's something to be said for that. Custom isn't exactly sentiment. There's the Shastra, there's custom, which might not be exactly lined up with the Shastra, and then there's just being sentimental. So she's not. It's not being accused of being sentimental here, but custom, culture, like that. That was the culture, So, and Prabhupada goes on to say here that, in the next paragraph he says, but in spite of all this, Draupadi desired that Ashvatthama be at once released, and it was all the same a good sentiment for her. Now, when I first read that, I thought to myself, is Prabhupada saying that, what can you expect from a less intelligent woman? But I don't think so. I don't think that's not my understanding after I thought about it a bit. And the next sentence kind of supports that's not the way to understand it, because he says this means that a devotee of the Lord can tolerate all sorts of tribulation personally, but still such devotees are never unkind to others, even to the enemy. So I think what Prabhupada means by it was all the same, a good sentiment for her was, considering her situation, how much she was injured, how much she was hurt by this whole thing, it's amazing. And it was a good sentiment that she was prepared to consider not taking revenge, basically. She didn't want revenge. That's it. She doesn't go on to say that poor Ashvatthama or anything like that. She doesn't talk about him, but she doesn't want revenge, and that's a good sentiment for her. And also, when she gets a chance to continue to speak here, which she's about to do, she points out that she doesn't want to see Ashvatthama's mother suffer like she's suffering, crying always. She's so unhappy because of what happened. She's crying always, and she doesn't want to see Ashvatthama's mother, Creepy, who's kind of innocent, be in that same position. So that's, that was what I think. That's the way I understand that. Now, somebody might ask, well, this is like, this is a pretty heavy situation. How is it that Krishna's devotees, these intimate devotees of Krishna, are being put in this, situation? So many, who was it? Queen Kunti later on praised, let these calamities, so many calamities, so many difficult situations are coming to them one after the other. How do we understand that? Well, one thing is that, the Bhagavatam is not like the Manusamhita. This is not a lesson in crime and punishment. You're not getting a lesson in crime and punishment from the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's way beyond that. And actually, Prabhupada kind of gives in one of the previous purports, Prabhupada gives a bit of an insight into what we're really experiencing here in these pages of the Bhagavatam. He says, Lord Sri Krishna encouraged Arjuna outwardly to test Arjuna's sense of duty. It was not that Arjuna was incomplete in the sense of his duty, nor was Lord Sri Krishna unaware of Arjuna's sense of duty. But Lord, here he is. But Lord Sri Krishna put to test many of his pure devotees just to magnify the sense of duty. And Prabhupada doesn't say, but I'll say. Not only he magnifies it, they're already great. And by putting them in these difficult situations, Krishna knows that, they're going to... Well, I'll leave the rest of it here. The gopis were put to such tests as well. Prahlad Maharaj was also put to such a test. All pure devotees come out successful in their respective tests by the Lord. So Krishna puts his pure devotees in these difficult situations, knowing he's confident, of course, that everybody has free will, but Krishna's confident that they're going to pass the test, and that's going to even increase their, glory and their elevation and advancement in Krishna consciousness, and it's also going to make it well known for worldwide at that time, and for it'll be immortalized in the pages of Bhagavatam and, for all history like that. So that's what's going on here. It's not just, as I said, it's not just a lesson in crime and punishment. The Bhagavatam is way beyond that. It's Krishna, putting his devotees in situations to give them an opportunity to demonstrate Paro Dharma, the topmost religious principles, the topmost considerations like that, and it's simultaneously glorify them. So that's what's going on here, and it's difficult to understand this. It's actually, unless you're a somewhat advanced in devotional, well, Prabhupada's telling us, but otherwise, you might misunderstand it. But that's the way Krishna. It's very difficult to understand. Bhishma Dev is, I can't remember the translation, but there's some. And later on, we're going to hear the prayers of Bhishma Dev just before he's passing away, and he makes some sort of statement like that. Very difficult to understand what Krishna's up to, right? There's a verse like that. I mean, I can't remember but he's very. Yeah. Yeah, his purpose is very difficult to understand. Tom, I'll give a quick example of that if I can. How am I doing? I can't see the clock, is it? 6 minutes left? Okay. So, there's an example of that. And another pastime with Lord Chaitanya, there was this devotee, Pradyumna Mishra, and he came to Lord Chaitanya and he wanted to, he said, I want to hear, about Krishna Katha. He was in good standing, and he did it in a very humble, submissive way. And Lord Chaitanya said, well, actually, yeah, that's very good, but you should go to Ramananda Roy, because I even hear from him. So Pradyumna Mishra said, okay, sure. And he went to Ramananda Roy, and he was there, and he was waiting. And then he got there, and the servant said, okay, yeah, I'll let him know you're here. He's busy at the moment. He's doing something. Works out Ramananda Roy was training some girls to do a dance for Lord Jagannath, and dealing with him in a very intimate way. Anyway, so Pradyumna Rishi, it took some time, and finally when Ramananda Roy actually met Pradyumna Mishra, it was the end of the day. So, you know, Pradyumna Mishra wasn't finding any fault. He was just kind of like the whole, it was just like, he didn't know what to make of the whole situation. But he was a, you know, he's an advanced devotee himself and a Brahmin. And so he just kind of, he reserved judgment and he just was, but when he finally got the opportunity to speak to Ramananda Roy, he just said, well, you know, I've just come to see you. Ramananda Roy said, how can I serve you? What can I do? You know, he very humble attitude. And he said, no, I've just come to see you for my own purification. And now I've seen you and I'm happy and, you know, I'm going to go. And so he went. So then Lord Chaitanya saw him the next day and said, so did you hear about Krishna from Ramananda Roy? And Pradyumna Mishra said, no, I didn't. You know, he described the situation, you know, what happened. It was late in the day. But then he also, in a proper way, with the proper attitude, explained, well, you know, this Ramananda Roy is a pretty unusual fellow. You know, when I got there, this is what he was doing. And Lord Chaitanya said, yeah, that's Ramananda Roy. He's so elevated. His mind is like stone or like wood. You know, he's so fixed in transcendental consciousness that only he could do that. I can't even do that. If I see the form of a woman, even in a doll, I'm becoming agitated. But Ramananda Roy is so fixed, you know, so absorbed in transcendence that he could do anything and it doesn't disturb him. He's the only one who has that authority. Anyway, so he told him to go back. He told him, you know, don't let that, just don't forget about that. Don't worry about that. Just go back and hear from him. So he went back and Ramananda Roy, you know, spoke Krishna Katha to him and Pradyumna Rishi, you know, became very enlivened by that. But so Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he makes the point that, you know, at the end of that, relating that pastime, that don't think you're going to understand the purpose of the Supreme Lord, Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, you're not. It's very deep, and you're not going to understand it. And he gave as examples, that Lord Chaitanya, Ramananda Roy was considered a Sudra, right? Or even lower, you know, he was, Lord Chaitanya heard from him. Lord Chaitanya heard from somebody who was considered a sudra. Lord Chaitanya was coming from a Brahmin family. He was a sannyasi. You know, socially, there was quite a bit of a distance between them. But he was, and not only did he hear from himself, but he sent Pradyumna Mishra, who was an elevated Brahmin, you know, purified Brahmin, to also hear from Ramananda Roy. Sanatan Goswami was basically a Muslim, you know. I mean, we know he wasn't. He was, because he's from a Saraswat Brahmin family. But by his association with the Nawab Hussein Shah, etc., and that, you know, that Islamic government, he was like basically a Muslim. I mean, he had a Muslim name, Dabi Akash, Shakir Malik, and they had some of the habits, you know. So, but Lord Chaitanya used him to, you know, demonstrate elevated devotional service, and probably the most amazing example is Haridas Thakur. See, so there's Lord Chaitanya, who can understand. You know, he's showing in an amazing way, you know, the power, the glories of the, you know, and the potency of taking shelter of the holy name and Krishna consciousness, even through these people who are so, you know, socially so called degraded. Just to, you know, but you know, if you couldn't understand that if you weren't a devotee. I mean, anyway, so you're not going to be able to figure out the purpose of Krishna. You're not going to be able to figure out the purpose of Lord Chaitanya unless yourself are a very confidential, surrendered devotee, and then they may reveal it to you. See? So we should just, in conclusion, follow in the footsteps of that Brahmin poet. He was smart. That was a smart guy. Not Ashwatthama. That Brahmin poet, that's the kind of, we should remember him and try to follow. He was submissive. And just by being, he made a mistake. He really made a mistake. You know, I mean, Srup Dhammarag had to call him a fool and chastise him. But because I guess his intentions was sincere. So he just took the humble position. He was submissive. He just, with the straw of the street in his mouth, dandavats, okay, I don't know what, you know, please just give me some mercy. He's probably down there praying while he was doing it. And he got the mercy. He was, okay, no problem. That's no big deal. People make mistakes. And, you know, he got on. So we should follow in the footsteps of him. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Archita Prabhu.
Hi, Prabhu. Thank you for a nice class. I would like to know where that definition of the straw in his mouth came from, because it seems to fly in the face of Prabodhananda Saraswati's recommendation. That first prophet quoted many times, Dante Nidaya, that for preaching, you put a straw in your mouth and then you go and you say, hey, Sadhava, So you're supposed to speak. And if you think about it, you can speak with a straw in your mouth. It's not a problem. Do you try it? Put a straw in your mouth. Hey, Sara, you can speak with a straw in your mouth. It doesn't prevent you from speaking. And Prabodhananda Saraswati says, put a straw in your mouth, approach them on the street, say, hey, Sadhava, you're a great devotee. And then they will naturally ask you, what do you want? Forget everything you know and just meditate on the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So you can speak with a straw in your mouth, and then that's what Prabodhananda Saraswati recommends. I would like to know where that definition came from. I never saw it anywhere.
Well, I'll tell you where I got it from. I went on his yatra when, not this past Gopurni, but the one before that, and that's how I heard him explain it. But yeah, that's a good point you're making. How would contradict what Prabodhananda Saraswati is saying? So I'll have to ring him up and ask him about that. Where did he get that from? Yeah. Anybody else have any questions or comments? Mother Nagapatni.
Thank you, perfect class, Prabhu. Very nice. I was thinking about how Ashwatthama, he had this problem with pride, and it shows how difficult it was for him to give this up. He went to such extended lengths to destroy the Pandavas, and still he couldn't give up his pride, even though he was punished in various different ways. So it's an interesting example for what we have to go through to give up our pride.
Yeah. Actually, you just remind me of one other point I was going to make, and I can make it really quickly. That, you know, he was given... you pay a price for being merciful and lenient sometimes. And he's an example of that. You know, Krishna told Arjuna, kill him immediately. And he didn't do it. And, but the result was, and I'm not saying it was a mistake, but they gave him another chance, and what did he do? He invoked the Brahmastra weapon to kill Maharaj Parikshit. I mean, if Krishna wasn't, and when we read it, when we're going to see that, the Pandavas all were getting their weapons out, but Krishna had to, it was Krishna who saved Maharaj Parikshit, not the Pandavas, by trying to counteract that Brahmastra, because there wasn't time. So Krishna had to intervene and personally save Maharaj Parikshit. And then another example of that, of, you know, how it's maybe not a good idea, or you have to pay a price for being lenient or kind or whatever, compassionate, is Jayadrath. Jayadrath was, son-in-law to Dhritarashtra and brother-in-law to all his sons. Because he, you know, Dhritarashtra had 100 sons and he had one daughter. And Jayadrath married the one daughter of Dhritarashtra, who was the sister of all. Okay, so married man, but he decided he liked Draupadi. And he either attempted to kidnap her or kidnapped her. I can't remember which, if he's actually successful, he just attempted. But he went far enough so that he was an aggressor. He was clearly an aggressor. And it states in the there's a Vedic injunction that there's six kinds of aggressors that can be killed immediately, and there's no sin incurred in killing such aggressors. And one of them is somebody who tries to steal your wife, and that's exactly clearly what he was trying to do. So they didn't kill him. You know, they could have killed him for that, but they spared him. And as a result of that, you know, they just cut his hair a funny way, like they did with, what's his name, Rukmi, I believe. And, later he comes back and he performs all these penances and austerities like that. He gets a benediction from Lord Shiva. He wanted to be invincible, you know, and Lord Shiva said, well, I can't do that, but at least for one day, you know. I think we heard Shyamakund tell us, at least for one day you could be. So that was why they, you know, and what happened was on one day in the battle, the Kauravas came with this Chatravyuha formation, and Arjuna knew how to break into it and get out of it, but he was occupied in another part of the battlefield with Krishna. So Abhimanyu went in, but he didn't know how to get out. And then when Abhimanyu went in, he broke the formation. He got in himself. Then Jayadrath came and closed it, you know, and they, because he had that benediction that he would, for one day, he'd be invincible. Nobody could get by him. And then, so nobody could go in there to help Abhimanyu. And that's how all the other warriors ganged up on Abhimanyu and they killed him. So they, you know, they paid a price for being lenient. And maybe that's, I don't know, just thought I'd throw
that out. In contrast, the devotee is grateful for the difficulties. They thank Krishna, like Kunti did, thanking him. And again, wishing for these difficulties, because the difficulties cause a devotee to think more of Krishna, whereas a demonic mentality will just think of their own revenge and gratification.
I guess that's the overriding consideration. Anybody else had something? Or okay, Mata, and then one last one, and over there.
Thank you. I find it interesting that Draupadi, she acted in a different way with Dushasan, and he was the son of great parents, and his mother ended up crying too. If you could say something about that.
Yeah, Dushasan. Well, okay. Are you referring to eventually what happened to him? Uh huh. Yeah. Well, and Draupadi kind of was pleased by the whole thing. You're saying. She was being disrobed. Dushasan was the person who tried to disrobe her. Was actually the person who was pulling off the sari, and she appealed. Everybody knows she appealed to Bhishma. She appealed to Drona. She appealed to Dhritarashtra. I don't know who else she appealed to, but they were all silent. Nobody was coming to her rescue, and finally she was holding the sari on with one hand and praying with another, and then she eventually just gave up trying to hold the sari and just prayed to Krishna. Krishna supplied the unlimited sari. But then after that, after that actually it happened, Bhima stood up and he took a vow. And if you ever, I don't know, I'm not encouraging people to watch Mahabharata videos, but if you ever happen to see that episode on the Mahabharata thing on the YouTube, it's like Bhima was really like, whoa, was he like, burning with anger, and he just said, I'm going to take this vow now. Nobody's ever taken a vow like this in the past, or is anybody going to ever take a vow like this in the future? Something like that. And he said, I'm going to, rip that Dushasan, I'm going to rip his arm from his chest and drink his blood, or something like that, And he did it, and everybody was quiet when he did it. So, Hare Krishna, what can you ask me what I say about that? I think it's justified. I mean, devotees aren't. Not every devotee has to. And that was Bhima's mood. Bhima never was. That was his. He was a pure devotee too, and he was in that, that rasa. And I think that was. What do you think?
Well, that makes sense, because I also heard something that when Draupadi had to discredit Karna when he wanted was in the Swayamvar, is because it was her whole purpose was to marry Arjuna. And so it would have interfered.
Yeah.
He was definitely a great warrior. And that makes sense, because it had to fulfill that vow.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess the one point is, as I kind of touched upon in the class, that when you're considering these pastimes, there's a lot more than mundane morality involved. It's a lot of, rasa and devotees and just, seeing how the devotee, understanding the psychological dynamics of a devotee, how they respond to certain situations and how Krishna conscious they are in situations that other people would find extremely difficult. They're able to respond in a way that Krishna is pleased with, and that's all, the more glorification for them. So anyway, I'll stop there. That's it. Granto Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.